You are listening to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast. I'm your host, Tyus France. Sitting next to me in studio is Alex. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tyus.
No video for this episode because I am just not pretty enough, and I'm far too lazy to set up the video right now. So you're all going to have to deal with that. Sorry, guys. Or for the listeners on YouTube, you just get to stare at the logo. Tragedy, I know. There's a ton for us to talk about today because we've been off for a little bit. We've got Syria. Zuckerberg was in front of Congress. We can go into the military-industrial complex, all kinds of fun things to dive into. And wasn't it about a year ago that we did a episode on Syria?
Yes, unfortunately, Tyus, it seems like we're going to have an annual episode where we can remind listeners about the dangers of the government striking with absolutely no intelligence and no understanding of... And I would say, if you listen a year ago, you'll hear an argument from me that chemical, biological, and nuclear means we can go in if we have proof. But because there was no proof then, and I have belief that there's no proof now... you're going to hear a little bit of a different opinion from me now.
Yeah. So it seemed that Assad is sitting there in this situation where he's about to win. Everything's lined up. This man has faced tremendous odds. I'm not saying he's a good man, but he has faced some tremendous challenges, and he was on the precipice of it all going away, and suddenly the news comes out that he has made the most ridiculously tactical decision maybe ever, because if he did what people are claiming he did, what really the U.S. government is claiming he did, is that of using gas on his own people, it opens the door for the U.S. to come in and attack, which we seem to have been wanting to do for, well, I guess, what, a year, huh? To jump in and do that. And then we've got Russia saying that if we go after them, they're going to shoot down our missiles, so they might be involved. Everybody seems to want to jump in to Syria. What are your thoughts, Alex?
Well, I mean, again, a year ago I claimed, and I still maintain, that chemical, biological, nuclear, we should have a vested interest in destroying those kinds of weapons because the danger of them getting out and being used by terrorists is a real credible threat. But in this case, and in the case a year ago when we had more information, it became apparent there was no proof, and I believe there is no proof now, that there were any chemical weapons used. In addition, the chemical weapons this time killed about 30 people, which is tragic. But the fact is we probably killed far more in our missile and airstrikes. And the fact is that I see a life as a life. And there is no logic. I think Rand Paul probably said it best. He said either Assad is the dumbest dictator in the entire world, or he didn't actually do this. And I think that Rand Paul speaks for many libertarians in this particular instance, where that's... And I'm glad that we have at least one U.S. senator that's being able to make this point, which is, you know, how silly, how dumb would Assad have to be to do the one thing that would invite Russia and the U.S. to start a proxy war in his already war-torn country? And I think that's something we might want to discuss. We often go back to the Constitution as libertarians because we do believe in the founding documents. We do believe in the fact that we're a republic, not a democracy, because democracies don't protect the minority, and republics do. They protect the minority's rights. And I think that maybe we should discuss the fact that this strike is not, in fact, constitutional.
Yeah, so from what I understand, though, as far as a constitutional, us going to war legally hasn't happened since World War II, if I've got that right. After that, it's all been the president just kind of saying, hey, I'm doing this. Now, there have been things passed that say that the president can basically say, I'm going to bomb something, and then Congress has to sign off on it after the fact, which is a little weird. But the entire idea of war, you had Congress in on it deciding this. You didn't have one person that could just pull the trigger. And we've seen a dramatic expansion of presidential power Specifically, I mean, it's been going on for a long time, but specifically after 9/11, and then expanded again, not after Bush, with Obama, and I wouldn't say it's expanded with Trump. I would say he's probably been about the same. If anything, he gets a lot of pushback, which I'm fine with the president getting a lot of pushback. I want that stuff slowed if possible. But he's definitely being able to utilize those same freedoms. That's those same, I shouldn't say freedoms. I should say, I won't say liberties either. Those same, contortions of justice of government that have been granted to him. And, I heard Penn Jillette once say that if you argue that that any president has ever been perfect, you still shouldn't give that president absolute power, because the next guy that comes in is likely not going to be perfect. And hey, guys, we're in that situation. We don't have the perfect president, not even by a long shot. And it could be argued that we've never had the perfect president and never will. So why do we let anybody have the power to launch nuclear weapons or anything else against other countries? It seems incredible to me.
And the fact is that this is not some new debate. Madison very carefully wrote about why the founding fathers believed that only Congress should have the war-making power. And before anyone tries to throw the Article II constitutional defense at me, the government's lawyers have made that argument, and I don't buy it, and no one else should either. It merely states in the Constitution of the United States, our founding document, that that the president is the commander-in-chief. It does not say the president has complete and unilateral control over the entire military, when it can be used, and where it can be used. It very carefully vests that power in the branch least likely to go to war, and I have to agree, Congress. Congress hasn't declared war since we went into Afghanistan in 01, in 02.
Did they declare war in that?
So there was an authorization of the use of military force, which under the War Powers Resolution is one of the two ways the president can operate there legally. And I'm certainly simplifying the congressional machinations that took place there, but the fact is Congress said, that's okay. Now, where we got into trouble was when Obama in 2013 started to go beyond the borders that were established in the authorization. And that was the crack under which Trump's lawyers now are arguing, since Obama was allowed to, was permitted to go beyond the borders to fight ISIS of the where the AUMF was, that Trump also can do that. But we weren't fighting the enemies stated in the AUMF, or we weren't in the country stated in the authorization of the use of military force. We went and we basically unilaterally decided. And what's sad is that it has been published just today that a 5-ton truck pulled up to the factory a day before the strikes and moved whatever chemical weapons might have been there off-site. So our airstrikes actually didn't blow up anything. The fact is that it was already too late. And I'm sorry, but if we are worried about chemical weapons in the country, you go to Congress and say, give me the authorization to hunt these down. Give me the money. Give me the right to send our children to go and die in some other country. And at least let Congress do its job, which might be to decide not to do it. And unfortunately, our presidents are so worried that Congress will say no, that they're like the kid that says better to ask for forgiveness than for permission. Well, that's exactly what we have now, ladies and gentlemen. We're like any parent that has said no and then allowed their kid to do it anyway. We have to be willing to intervene in these unconstitutional acts. We should have intervened in Obama's in 13, and where were the anti-war Democrats then, is my question. And now we have a handful of Republicans, but mostly Democrats opposing. So there's been a flip-flop between the two parties, which proves that they're both the pro-war party. They both believe that as so long as their person is in office, then it's constitutional. And there's no way you can run a country like that.
Yeah, well, Obama partnered with ISIS after the fact, after going to war with them. And now Trump is doing the exact same thing. And it seems that there's no stopping this. Now, I wanted to talk to you. I wanted to get your opinion on the idea of weapons of mass destruction, whether that is gas or atomic or really anything. My question revolves around the idea of gun control, because we talk about that several times, especially when we're dealing with mass shootings in the U.S. and that comes up a lot. And a lot of people say, well, you know, people shouldn't, they extend it and they go, we shouldn't extend that all the way to nukes, right? People shouldn't be able to own nukes or aircraft carriers or a jet or whatever the case may be. And I wonder, at some level, once the technology exists, how do you really stop it from existing? All you're doing is saying whose hands it gets to be within. And I know, Alex, that you're very much against gas, those chemical weapons. Do you feel that we should just ban that and basically say, like, these are never going to be created? And if so doing, doesn't that just put it in the hands of the people that will be outlawed and created and live outside of the world's agreed upon rationale with that?
That's an excellent question, and it certainly appears to be a loophole in sort of my longstanding principles about why gun control would fail. But the principal difference for chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons is you can control access to the materials used to build those in a way that you can't do with guns. Guns are made out of materials you just can't control access to. Even if you did, someone could melt down a fridge or melt down a piece of machinery and then smelt their own. Creating guns is such an old technology, and even with some new ones like 3D printing, it's even easier. But it's such an old technology, it's impossible to prohibit. Knives are even older, right? We've been using knives since the Bronze Age. That's what literally distinguished us into the Bronze Age, is we created knives or spears and other spear-like weapons using bronze and then later iron.
Did you hear that England just surpassed New York in violent crimes, and they did it with knives only, and now they're talking about banning knives in England, which is, anyways,
right,
off topic, but just kind of interesting and amazing. Yeah.
It is an interesting aside that when you try to prohibit things that are easy to come by, easy to make, that you really have to level the playing field by allowing anyone who wants them to have them.
So I definitely understand that point when it comes to like nuclear, but with things like gas, like maybe chlorine gas is really, really hard to make. I have no idea. Is that something that we could restrain as a society?
Well, chlorine gas is pretty easy to make with cleaning supplies. I won't go into the details here, but you
That's a good choice not to go into the details.
You can, in fact. I mean, anyone who takes a college-level chemistry of even basic level understands the idea behind bases and acids reacting to create waters and salts, and some of those byproducts are gaseous. And so you could, in fact, that's one of the reasons why it's illegal to mix certain cleaning chemicals together, because the government knows, right, just like every chemist knows, that you can literally create chlorine gas in your bathroom and then kill yourself. And no one wants that.
So is it just the quantity, the supply, the distribution, that's the hard thing to do?
Well, the government will notice when someone buys, let's say, 30 gallons of bleach.
Okay, so it's quantity. Consumer.
Right, yeah. So the percentage of the reagents you need to create any kind of weaponized version of chlorine gas are found in such small quantities, and where they're found in large quantities is carefully tracked by the government. So chemistry, even down to the chemistry, high school chemistry teacher, all of those quantities are very carefully tracked. You're rarely going to find a situation like, oh, what's the name of that show with the bathtub and he melted down the bodies and stuff.
Oh, Breaking Bad.
Yes. You're rarely going to, thank you. Oh my gosh.
No, you're on my level now.
Yes. You're rarely going to find the Breaking Bad situation because the government does track all of, in other words, if I start spiking in my use of sulfuric acid or muriatic acid or something, that's a data point that could lead to some sort of investigation.
Gotcha. Okay.
So again, it's very easy to control. You're not going to 3D print chlorine gas or any of these weapons of mass destruction, so to speak.
Well, I mean, kids have made nukes for science fairs. They just haven't had the active ingredient of uranium in them.
Well, that's the thing, is they're not weaponized, right? Yeah. I mean, you could use X-ray tubes and this sort of thing to create crude weapons, but they're going to be limited at most to the one victim. Mm-hmm. And that's what the distinguishing characteristic is when you have sufficient quantity to make it a weapon of mass destruction, now it is, right? So chemical weapons, we're not talking about somebody mixing two cleaning chemicals together and creating enough chlorine gas to partially kill a human. We're talking about someone who creates enough that when released into an area could wipe out an entire classroom or this sort of thing. And even if you were armed to the teeth, you're not going to even know before you've already died.
But this is on a sliding scale, because you can technically buy enough manure to get nitrogen to create a bomb that could take out a building. I mean,
and they track that too.
Oh, they do track manure now.
if you, they will, yes, in fact, most of these bomb makers are found before you've even known they existed, because they made the mistake of thinking they're not going to track how much soil I buy.
Oh, interesting.
And sure enough, you buy the wrong amount and you're linked to any sort of online hate or crime. So that's the way it's supposed to work. And I understand all of us listening are probably going, well, Alex is being awfully idealistic. And I am. And again, we had huge failures, obviously, at every level of government with the mass shootings recently. But again, there are many, many government agencies working around the clock to make sure that people can't build these at home. And again, most people aren't. So the task is much easier, since the people that like to build them like to talk about it too. I mean, most of them aren't smart enough to shut up and stay at home and be the perfect crime that no one knows about, right? They can't stand that. And because of those kind of personality traits, they kind of take themselves out of the equation before they can even use these things.
Well, speaking of criminals, let's transition. Let's talk a little bit about some powerful, powerful criminals, in my opinion. Specifically, Zuckerberg was in front of Congress. I'm not saying Zuckerberg is a criminal. I'm saying Congress is. And that's a joke, everyone. So
I don't know. I mean, I sort of agree.
Maybe.
I think that where they've initiated force, that they've committed a crime.
Okay. I'm not judge, jury, and executioner on this one, but I would say that the side that was probably more guilty of doing something wrong is those who are questioning Zuckerberg. And there was tremendous irony. There was a lot of jokes coming out of this. A lot of people were making fun of Zuckerberg for looking like a robot, because he does.
He looks like Commander Data given a presentation.
Yep. I saw a great one where it's him drinking water and he's like, look, I'm drinking the official beverage of Earth. I thought it was great. And he's super composed and his mind works slightly different than most of us. So his answers were pretty clean and locked in and all of that. The booster seat was noticed by a lot of people. I thought that was interesting and kind of funny.
That was hilarious.
Yeah,
that
was funny.
Let's be honest.
Yeah. And then I think the two things that really jumped out at me was, one, this was an organization that has done mass surveillance on the United States citizens for a long time now, questioning a private businessman who has his people, who has his users agree to terms of service before collecting information. And they were talking about how potentially unethical it was that he was doing that. So it was one of the greatest moments of the pot calling the kettle black that I had ever seen. And then the second part of that was, it seemed that nobody who was questioning him knew, I mean, at best, they knew very little about what they were even talking about. And they're talking to one of the, arguably, one of the smartest guys around. This guy out of college basically changes the way we communicate as a society. He's got his finger on the pulse of a lot of things, tremendous influence, and these guys don't know how he makes money. It seriously felt like they were going to ask him for tech support and be like, how do I stop spam on my computer? Or does Norton antivirus really work? Like, I was just like, what are you wasting his time for up there? What were your thoughts on this whole thing, Alex?
Well, I'm going to echo what Andy Craig and Joe Henchman, two of my Facebook friends and really smart guys, have said on the subject, which is it's unfortunate that we missed some great privacy, discussion of privacy and what that means in modern day America. We missed that because Congress was so out of touch with even how the internet works. I think Congress, if they understood what was going on, I think they might understand better why the NSA is such a threat. Because some of the questions they were asking were like, could you print out everything about me? And he's like, we wouldn't do that, but yeah, we could if you're on there. Yeah, we could. In fact, you can go on Facebook and print out your entire Facebook history, all the gigabytes of data they have on you, everything. Everything you've ever posted, everything you've ever messaged, everything that they have in their servers on you from the time you created your Facebook on, they can give you. And they do, and you can download it for free. And I think I would encourage people to do that if they're really worried about, well, what do they have on me? And I would argue to them that you need to be very careful about not only your Facebook friends, because if they're not real, they're collecting that data for you, from you for free. So then your privacy filters don't really work, but make sure you have good privacy filters. You know, some of us that work in politics, we do have public statuses, but I periodically use their tool on Facebook to limit, and basically it's a button that makes all of my previous posts friends only. So periodically, my Facebook basically gets locked down to the last week or two. And then, you know, 2 or 3 months go by and it's all public and then it's locked back down. And that's so that I can't have somebody dredging up a post from 2010, you know, and trying to make a case about it to me or to use it for marketing purposes. And I would encourage you to take a more active role in protecting your Fourth Amendment privacy rights, because no one else is. Congress isn't. Congress is the worst offender. I mean, I'm sure we've talked many times about the NSA on this podcast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's atrocious what's going on. And if you think Facebook is the only potential threat around your privacy, I saw a video today where somebody was checking to see if Google was listening on the microphone and basically would talk about things like dog treats, and then went online and started looking around and up popped ads for dog treats. And who knows if that was coincidental or whether they are listening. I mean, we definitely have tools. I have tools in this room that can listen in on my voice, like Alexa or Siri or Google Home. All of those things technically could be listening in or just listening to what I'm doing or what I'm saying if they wanted to. And I guess ultimately this stuff falls on your shoulders as a user to decide what kind of privacy you want. And at what convenience does that serve you? Because it's always a balance. Security and convenience are these double-edged swords, where if you want a really, really powerful password, you can have one, but to have that password, you now have to enter in maybe 20 characters to do it. It becomes inconvenient. And the holy grail is anything that makes it more convenient while increasing security. And that's why people are playing with, you know, biometrics and face scanning. I don't know if you've seen the iPhone 10, but that thing can just spot a face and instantly unlock. But with that, you still have this convenience factor. I saw a great video where somebody was trying to pay for something. He was trying to get his mom to pay for something on her phone, and he was holding the phone up in front of her face, trying to get her to look at the phone, and she wouldn't look at it because the moment she locked eyes with that phone, it would have approved the purchase that he was trying to make on the phone. So all of these things, every time you try and increase the convenience, you lose some security and vice versa. And it's something that you have to manage for your own life. If you're not willing to do that, start closing the doors or accepting the fact that people are going to be chewing up your data. And that includes Google, Facebook. I worked for Apple for a very, very long time, and we were very proud of the fact that we would keep things private. But if you go into your phone, if you have an iPhone, if you go in there and you go into, you can find where your phone has gone. Literally everywhere, and it'll track where you're at most commonly. I mean, it is scary how much data they know. If somebody were to get their hands on that, they would easily know where you work, where you live, and where you hang out every day. There's no real way of stopping this stuff, and that's the price we pay for great, great convenience. If you don't like it, you actually get to opt out, which is different than the NSA. You don't get to opt out on the NSA.
So hi, NSA.
Yeah, hey guys, we missed you.
But not really.
Not really. We don't see any value in what you bring to the table. But if you came out with a really nice smartphone, maybe that'd be cool. So yeah, that's my 2 cents on all of that. Hey, Mark Zuckerberg, keep doing the great work. You make it possible for me to create events really, really easily. You find a way for me to be able to find information on just about anybody I meet. So thanks everybody at Facebook. Thanks for giving a lot of people a platform where they can have sometimes inappropriate and sometimes incredibly constructive conversations, a great place to express their opinion, and hopefully with all the information you gain on people, you choose to use it wisely and not become evil. I know there's a compelling reason to go the other direction. I think it's funny that Google's motto is "Don't be evil." And now they own YouTube, and they're consciously taking off monetization from different videos, which ultimately, I mean, it's kind of a way of censorship, right? If one video can make money and the other video can't make money on opposing views, like, you've just made a way for them to limit speech, right? So they try not to be evil, but in the process of getting there, it's really hard not to fall into that trap. But at least they're a private organization. If you guys don't like it, you can switch over to Vimeo. If Facebook starts messing up, we can switch over to some new social media that's going to be out there. We've seen it happen before. It happened with MySpace. We went to Facebook. So it could absolutely happen again. With the NSA, we have no choice. And that's exactly why we've got to be careful about the government, because there is no competition. It's a guaranteed monopoly. There's no way out on something like that. What else do we got in the Libertarian Party right now? Anything interesting happening? We got 1%. We've covered that on a previous podcast.
Yep.
What's our next goals?
Well, obviously, we've switched into kind of candidate support mode. I would say that the number one goal for the party right now, and I am saying this as my official LP Nevada hat on, is basically we're trying to get an office. And so we've started a fundraising campaign this week. We sent out an email on Thursday asking for donations for this purpose. I believe in building from the ground up, so we'll be looking for a place that we can get for around $650 a month. We'll do a six-month contract, and we'll see where we're at in November. But I think that it's a reasonable ask, and I think that it's something that when we work together, I think that what'll happen is we'll be able to pool our resources in order to provide a place for all of the candidates in Clark, at least, to gather. And in order to make it worth it to candidates up north, we'll try to sponsor some phone banks for them down here. And, I know many campaigns are run, in fact, out of homes, especially local candidate campaigns. There's no shame in that. But it would be very nice to have an office, which is sort of a symbol for come learn about us, come meet us, come volunteer with us. I think that we have enough people now, we could easily staff that thing in the evenings and on the weekends for people to come to. Obviously, almost all of us work Monday through Friday during the day, and so we probably wouldn't be open then. But then again, no one's going to come by if we're all at work. So being open in the evenings and on weekends makes us accessible to people who do want to volunteer and want to do it at a time that's convenient for them. So please, I hate to be the Pat Robertson, send your money now. And if you don't know who that is, watch South Park. You'll eventually get to that episode. But basically, I would hope that you see value in what LP Nevada has been providing for its candidates, for you, for the legislation we've helped sponsor and get passed, and for the candidates that we hope to put into office this November. Please donate to the party. Please find and help where you can with campaigns. We need your help. This is our opportunity to showcase how well what 1% means to us and how well we can grow and really scare that. We've already scared the Republicans and Democrats, but it's time to put them on the run. It's time to, I want to see a mass exodus from those two parties of reasonable people who already believe what we do, but they just didn't quite see the possibility to win. And I want them to see that that exists now, and I want them to come home. I want America to come home to the Libertarian Party where we believe what they believe, and that to do that, we need to have a place for them to come. So again, a little bit of a long pitch, but please, if you'd like to donate, lpnevada.org/donate. If you want to sign up for a recurring donation, that helps us really well. Go to lpnevada.org and click on join now.
We're going to leave it there. Thank you for that. You get me all riled up, Alex. I appreciate it. Until next time, make it all about freedom.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.